by this text because it doesn't include women. Now some of you that are older are sitting there going, so what? Big deal. Today's women in today's society want to be included. Do they not? If you're a woman in the workplace, don't you want to be included?
Of course.
Come on. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Yes, you do. And so when you hear somebody say mankind, do you go, huh? What about womankind? Inclusive language is beginning to be demanded. And so even in the Bible, people are going through and saying, we have to use inclusive language. When I was examined by the Presbytery of Charlotte 25 years ago, I was not allowed to refer to God as He. 25 years ago, if I referred to God as He, I was called down. That was 25 years ago, folks. So number one, if I was preaching in a big church like Covenant or Myers Park, I would have to be very careful about using a text like this because it's not inclusive. Number two is, this text is very, very dangerous these days because it's not politically correct. Because it uses this word, look in verse 14, servants. Verna's sitting here. Even Verna's face is scrunched up. But if I was out in the world, this word servant is now very politically incorrect, is it not? Because of race? Come on, guys.
It is.
It's very difficult now because of what's going on in the world to use words like slave and like servant without apologizing. And I'm not being condescending here. I, as a Southern person, need to say very honestly, very sincerely, and very openly that I apologize for what my family in Alabama did in the 1700s. I have to apologize. I want to apologize that my family had slaves. Because that was wrong. It was very, very wrong. And my family even used the Bible to justify it. These are things that the Church of Jesus Christ has to struggle with honestly and openly today. Because we must be inclusive so that we talk the language of all people. Not just people that look exactly like us. And so, we begin this text that's very difficult even for people that look exactly like us. Again, it will be like a man or a woman going on a journey who called his servants or his friends and entrusted his property to them. To one, he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. And then he went on his journey. The man who had received 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. And after a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The woman with 2 talents also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful friend. You have been faithful with many things. I will put you in charge of many more things. Come and share your master's happiness. And then the guy who had received the 1 talent came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and I went out and I hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. And his master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown, and I gather where I have not scattered seed? Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the banker so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Yikes! Difficult text, would you not say? Mm-hmm. Listen to this quote. It's from several years ago now, and it is the President of the United States, Donald Trump. It's very old because Donald Trump says, I'll be 36 years old next year, and I've done everything I can do. Sometimes I think it's a mistake to have raced through it all so fast. What's the next level up? The grass isn't always greener. I work and I don't worry. How can you top that? I protect myself as well as anybody can. I prepare for things, but ultimately we end up all going. I don't believe in reincarnation. I don't believe in heaven. I don't believe in hell. But we all go someplace. Do you know? I can't for the life of me figure out where that is. Now, we're not getting into politics here. We're not talking about Donald Trump because we don't want to mix politics and the church. But we have to agree that this is a person who is amassing stuff and not giving any thought to what's next. Do you agree?
Yes.
We're not pointing the finger. We're just saying that here's somebody who's living for the weekend. Would you agree with that? And that there are a lot of folks on the planet who are doing that. We talked about that this morning, if you were here. It begins our text in a good manner because it points out that there are three things that we can do with our life. We can waste it, we can spend it, or we can invest it. Somebody give me an example of a way we can waste our life. Don't name names, please. How can we waste our life?
Gambling.
Gambling. How can we spend our life? Just spend it.
In service.
What, Jan?
In service.
In service. And how can we invest our life?
Doing for others.
Doing for others. Which one of those ways do you think Jesus would pick if you gave him a choice?
Service.
Doing for others, or as Jan said, service, but wasting, spending, or investing, you think Jesus would probably go for investing? I think so too. I think the Lord would say he wants us to invest our lives. I think out of this text, we can pull 7 things that God would tell us on how we can spend our lives on purpose and how we can use our talents that he has given us. This text proves to us that he has given every last one of us at least one talent. Verse 15 tells us that one guy got 5, one guy got 2, and one guy got 1. But one thing we know from verse 14, look at verse 14. Again, it'll be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. This is a parable. So it's like an allegory. Who's the man?
God.
God is the man. So God's going on a journey and he calls his servants together. Who's the servants?
Everybody.
That's us. God's going on a journey. He calls us together and he says, here's my property. I'm going to give it to you. Now, what's clear about this text is, who owns the property?
God.
God. What did we come into this world with?
Nothing.
What are we leaving this world with?
About the same.
Absolutely nothing. It reminds me of a joke I heard about an ambulance chasing lawyer. And he had decided that there really was a way to get stuff to heaven. So he asked his wife to go to the bank and withdraw a great, great sum of money. And he put it in two pillowcases and he put it in the attic directly above his bedroom. And he told his wife that his plan was that when he passed, he would go through the ceiling and through the attic and grab the two pillowcases and take them with him to heaven. Several weeks after her husband passed, she was in the attic cleaning and there were the pillowcases filled with the money. At what point, the wife muttered to herself, "Darn fool, I should have put those pillowcases in the basement." You know as well as I do, we didn't bring anything with us. We're not taking anything with us. And God owns it all. Can you think of one thing that you did on your own? One thing. Are you completely responsible for that job you have? Can you take total credit for the job you have? For the degree you have? For the home you bought? Can you take credit for the children you birthed? You cannot. Everything we have belongs to the Lord. And He doles it out. Ownership. God owns it all. The second thing we can get out of this passage is allocation. Verse 15. He gave one-fifth five talents. He gave another two, and He gave another one. We get this concept of talent from this Greek word. Talent. We use talent for gifts, abilities, but really we can use it for just about anything. But it's saying that God gives all of us something. Now He might give somebody a little more, somebody a little less, and He gives it to us based on our ability to handle it. Everybody gets something. Romans 12:6 says, "We have different gifts according to the grace given us." We all have a gift. We all have a talent. Everybody gets something. Look at verse 19, Jen. So if we go to the next screen. "After a long time, the master returns and he settles accounts." The master comes home and he settles his accounts. So the master's made an investment and he wants a return. You've taken your money to your financial planner and after some point you go back and you ask them, "Hey, Mr. Financial Planner, hey, Miss Financial Planner, how's my money doing?" That's what the master did. He went back and he said to these folks, "Hey, so what you doing with my money?" Well, the Bible's very clear that that's what God's going to do for us. I can imagine it's kind of like a video. He says, "Have a seat, Linda. Would you like some popcorn? Oh yeah, you like Diet Dr. Pepper. Let me get you a Diet Dr. Pepper. Put your feet up." And then he hits play. And I'm like, ugh. And he's like, "Those 5 years right there. What were you doing for those 5 years right there? Why weren't you preaching for those 5 years?" And I'm like, And he's like, "Yeah, I know." And then he's like, those 10 years over there, what were you doing there?" And I'm like, I got some popcorn stuck in my throat, Lord.
He's like, I gave you this, and this is what you did with it. Can you explain that one? Well, you see, he goes back in verse 20, and he says, the man who received the 5 talents brought another 5. And the master says, on the next page, well done, good and faithful servant. The guy who has 2 talents says, look, I got 2 more. Master says, well done, my good and faithful servant. The point of the story is really not these 2 guys. The point of the story is really the 3rd guy, which is on the next page, Jen. The 3rd guy, well, it's the 3rd guy. The 3rd guy took his master's money and he buried it. Now, if you're kind of like me, you're thinking to yourself, why is the master in verse 26, why is he so mean? Look at that language. You wicked, lazy servant. Now, I don't know about Fred Rose over there, but I like to sugarcoat stuff for my people.
You did it this morning.
Well, I pulled out every concordance, every interlinear, every Greek, everything I had. And I'm like, I can't do that. I cannot do wicked. Wicked is wicked. Because I have this relationship with God that I have with Morgan Elizabeth. And I can't call Morgan Elizabeth wicked. I might want to sometimes. So I go back to my Greek and I'm like, what does wicked mean? Well, wicked means evil. And I was like, no, I can't call Morgan Elizabeth evil, which means I'm saying, Lord, you can't call me evil. But he did, and he is. And I'm like, how can you call me evil, Lord? You love me. You love me so much that you hung on a cross knowing. Oh, yeah. You love me so much that you hung on a cross knowing that I am wicked. I can be evil. I can be that very, very servant who dug a hole and buried my talent in there. Think about it. You and me, let's just pick $1,000. That's a lot of money. We take $1,000 to our financial planner and we say, Miss Financial Planner, here is $1,000. I'll be back in a year. And I come back in a year and I say, Miss Financial Planner, where's my $1,000? And she says, well, you know what? I was kind of worried that maybe there was a depression coming, and so here's your $1,000 back. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? You could have at least put it in a bank where it could have earned 2.5% interest, right? You didn't even think to do that. You did what? You opened your file cabinet and you shoved it in your file cabinet? Because you were scared there was a depression coming or a recession or whatever those other things are? Well, yeah, because, you know, I was just worried that I might lose it. Well, that's not taking care of my money very well, is it? Because at the end of the day, it's all God's. And what God says is, I love my stuff. Not in a hoarding, sinful kind of way, but he says, I love my stuff so much that I want you, Elizabeth, to have it. And I want you to benefit from my stuff so much that it would make you joyful and happy, and you could share it with your friends and your family and all those around you, and you would use a little tiny bit of it for someone else or something else. But Elizabeth, if you're going to go bury it in a hole, then gosh darn it, I'm going to take it from you and I'm going to give it to Jeff Parker, because Jeff Parker took his and gave it to the homeless. And then all of a sudden, it's like, well, gosh, of course you are, Lord. Right? Because that's who you are. You want the homeless to benefit. You don't want Elizabeth to bury it in a hole. Are you with me? Or are you mad? Are you like, what? You can't do that, Lord. Talk to me. Don't just sit there. Don't be Presbyterian. Speak about it. Talk to me.
Well, it's his stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is his stuff. And he's a good steward of his stuff. And he's like, I want to teach you to be good stewards of your stuff, and maybe I'm going to use some really strong language and tell you how serious I feel about my stuff. And maybe Morgan Elizabeth will say, my mom uses some really strong language when she wants to get my attention.
But what's verse 24 mean? That he's basically saying God is a hard man, and yeah. Robert. I throw a bad one out.
No, please.
Harvesting where he had not sown, and gathering where you had not scattered seed.
Yeah, I think that third guy's
gonna
work on his delivery
a little
better.
That's what pissed him off.
That's the most difficult verse in the world. What does he mean by that? My interpretation, and Fred might be able to help me here, is that third guy he's doing this. He's projecting. He's making excuses and he's saying, none of this is my fault. This is all your fault. This is, you know, you started this. This is your fault. He's making excuses and he's saying to the Lord or to the master, if you wouldn't have been a hard man, this wouldn't have happened. If you wouldn't have sown where you didn't see, you didn't harvest where, you know what I mean? He's passing the buck. Does that make sense, Jeff?
The first part does, the projection part, but I don't understand about harvesting where you have not sown. It's almost implying that it's theft involved. That the master is gathering stuff that he didn't.
That he did, yeah.
Oh.
But we already know from the beginning that the master owned it all and he gave it to him. But yeah, I struggled with that one, and I read and read and read. I don't know if Fred or Christine have any more unpacking of that one to do, but
you're kind of at the limits of the language and the story. I mean, there's only so you can't go. If you look at all the commentaries in the world, I mean, you're looking back 20 centuries, a story that Jesus told, and you're trying to say, well, what's the meaning? I think you and Jeff have got the meaning that his view of Matthew's view. And he's saying, he uses two negatives for those last two phrases. Harvest, so you're right, he's blaming the master. And he's kind of putting responsibility on the master. If you had been more generous and kind and loving, then I would have done a better thing here.
Right.
I think he's saying, you gave me this money, but you didn't give me a book of instructions.
There you go. Did you hear Sally?
And he didn't give instructions to the other two, and they came up with 5 and 2.
But some
by the same token, isn't there? We don't have verse 27. It's not there, but I'll write it for you. You've done poorly, but I still love you, and I will give you another chance. This almost looks like, to me, somebody wrote a way for the church to make money. The whole, I've never understood this from the get-go. You're rewarded if you make money. He didn't ask him how he made the money. Obviously, there were some hard times around there, or else the man wouldn't have been afraid. So his answer was, well, he really can't kill me if I lose a bit and lose the money, and he might kill those other two guys. Those other two guys were gamblers. They took a chance. This guy was a cautious individual. Well, all cautious individuals get to heaven.
The one thing I did not tell you is when you go back to the beginning and the one talent, the two talents, and the five talents, one talent was a lifetime of income. So that was enough money that he would have made in his lifetime. So imagine that. That was a humongous sum of money. So even if he would have invested just a little tiny bit of it, the whole point of the parable is you didn't even try. You didn't even try. You did nothing. You know, how many times do you say to your kids, just try? I remember saying to Tanner, just try one little piece of broccoli. And you know, you can't pry their mouth open. You want to with the pencil, just pop. Tanner, just try one piece of broccoli. No. And now he's, you know, 38 years old and he'll eat the whole fruit section.
The whole point.
But the whole point is the guy didn't even try. And that's where I wanted to kind of segue into our spiritual gifts. And God gives us these talents. We all have talents, which is all of our ability and all of our resources. And He gives us all spiritual gifts. And, you know, knowing so many of you, I know so many of your spiritual gifts. And I'll bet you, you have many, many, many more spiritual gifts that you have never even discovered. They say that we all have between 500 and 700 abilities, each and every one of us. 500 abilities. Your spiritual gifts are different than your abilities. They're kind of unique gifts. And I remember they used to tell us, Fred and Christine, I don't know if you were taught this, that our spiritual gifts were only supposed to be used in the church, that we could not use them outside the church. Now that sounds kind of ooh to me. I mean, there shouldn't be things that you can do only in the church and things that you could do only outside the church. I think we should be living in a world where our churchiness lives in the secular world and our secularness lives in the church world, so that it's tomorrow night when I talk about salt and light. We should be the same people in the church that we are in the world, and the same people in the world that we are in the church. But anyway, when we talk about our spiritual gifts, if you don't know your spiritual gift or you've never done a spiritual gift inventory, it's very, very, very valuable, because we as pastors are guilty of looking around our little flock and saying, oh my goodness, so-and-so just left. We have a hole on the worship committee. We have a new member, Winston, get on the worship committee. Well, who knows if Winston's spiritual gifts fit on the worship committee? Now, Winston's gifts would fit pretty much anywhere, I know that. But, you know, we do that. We plug people into holes just because that's what we do. But we should never do that. In my case, my spiritual gifts, believe it or not, you're probably thinking after hearing me talk for all day, my spiritual gifts are preaching and teaching. And if the church, if the Presbyterian church were to tell me to be a chaplain, which you would probably think, well, you know, Linda could go be a chaplain, you think? Well, I couldn't, because I'm an introvert. Dick Walker's laughing. I asked Morgan. Morgan, am I an introvert? Pat, am I an introvert? I'm an introvert. So being with you today takes massive amounts of energy. So I have to. I get the joy of being with you tomorrow night, but that means Tuesday and Wednesday, don't you dare call me. Yeah, Morgan's like, woof. I will go into a hole and I won't talk, I won't answer my phone, I won't look at my computer, I'll just be like in a little cocoon. It'll take me 2 or 3 days to recharge my battery. Now, why God would put an introvert in a ministry position, who knows? But if you tell me to go be a chaplain and work in a hospital from 8 to 5, 5 days a week, I would blow up, burn out, crash and burn. So when we try to take the body of Jesus Christ and put people into positions where they don't fit, it's like plugging the hairdryer in to a bad socket. It's just like, boom! And so instead of flourishing and having 10 times more energy, you burn up, or you blow up, or you go away. So it's so important that you know your spiritual gift, and then you say to your pastor or to your committee or to your spouse, that ain't my spiritual gift. I can't do that. You know, John Kohlberg, give him some numbers. Yeah, he's going to thrive. But, you know, send him to the hospital and let him sit and talk to somebody for 2 hours? What? Let me share a couple of passages with you that I love. And if you don't know me, if you haven't been around me very much, then that's probably like Fred and Christine. I love, love, love Eugene Peterson's The Message. But you have to know that it's a paraphrase. So when you really want to just kind of just love on God and let God love on you, read Eugene Peterson's The Message, because it's just so simple, and it's so embracing, and it makes God's word so easy and simple. If you want to study the Bible, don't use Eugene Peterson's The Message, because it's a little too simple. But when he talks about our spiritual gifts and the body of Christ, it's so very wonderful. And when you're talking about a church, I just, especially when we're talking about Meadow Lake, I was thinking about it coming up here. You know, people pass all day long, and you can ask people in Huntersville about Meadow Lake, and they go, oh, Meadow Lake, yeah, it's that pretty little church up on the hill. You know, and they talk about the architecture and how it's so atypical and it's so unique. Or some people go, is that a church? Is that a church? It's not a daycare, or it doesn't look like a church. And they talk about the pretty lawn and Dick says, or Sally says, Dick cuts the back and Henry cuts the front. Do y'all ever switch up? It's like,
if you try switching anything up with Dick, let me know how.
Is your spiritual gift cutting the backyard and his spiritual gift is cutting the front yard? Is that how that?
When Dick touches tractor.
I have the small tractor, he has the big tractor. And he won't let me play with his big tractor. But then I don't feel bad. He won't let his own son play with the big tractor.
A church. And you know, you say church. And sometimes we get caught up in that word and we think of church as a building. And we think of church as architecture. But God does not call this a church. And God does not see this as a church. God looks down on this place that I know he loves very much, and he sees the body of his son, Jesus Christ. This is the body of his son Jesus. And he doesn't see you as members, like members of Sam's Club. He sees you as organs. Real organs. I mean, think of a body. Morgan works in the operating room at CMC Maine. So if she could take us to the operating room, and they've got that patient wide open, and there's the heart and the kidney and the liver. Well, you're a heart and you're a kidney and you're a liver and you're a lung and you're blood vessels. And I mean, it sounds eerie and icky and yucky, but none of us can function without the rest of us. And nobody's more important than another. And so when God looks down on Meadow Lake, he doesn't see this contemporary architectural structure. He sees the body of his son, Jesus Christ, and he sees those organs. And he knows that he planted each and every one of you here for a reason and a purpose. And without each and every one of you here, this body will cease to function. 1 Corinthians 12 says that each person is given something to do that shows who God is. That's that word glorify that we talked about this morning. Everyone gets in on it and everyone benefits. Eugene Peterson says this, "I want you to think about how it all makes you more significant, not less. A body isn't just a single part blown up into something huge. It's all the different but similar parts arranged and functioning together. If the foot were to say, 'I'm not elegant like the hand, embellished with rings, I guess I don't belong to this body,' would that make it so? If the ear said, 'I'm not beautiful like an eye, I don't deserve a place on the head,' would you want to take it off the body? If the body was all eye, could it hear? If the ear was not there, could it smell? As it is, we see that God has carefully placed each part of the body right where he wanted it." You see, God put this body together. He made it exactly the way he wanted it. No one is here by mistake. Everybody's here on purpose, for a purpose, to do God's will in this community. Tomorrow night, our passage is that you are salt and light, and you are a city on a hill. God put this church on this hill by the McGee family for a reason and a purpose. And he put everybody here with your specific spiritual gifts so that you could do something in this community and for this community. And back there on the back table are these things called shape. And there are these inventories. And I want you to take them home. And I want you to do them. There, I don't know, they might be 100. They might be a little more than 100 questions. And I want you to share them with your spouse or your friend or Emma and Izzy with each other or dad. And look at them. Be surprised at what your spiritual gifts are. And then share them with the session or with Fred or with Christine. And then try on a ministry for fun, and Fred and Christine might kill me. But what we tend to do in the church is we say, okay, well, we can't use Henry because Henry never does anything different. Let's use Fred. We say, okay, Fred, we're going to elect you to elder, and we're going to put you on evangelism for the next 3 years. Who cares if those are your gifts, but we're going to let you do this for the next 3 years. Don't fuss, don't complain, come to every meeting and we'll talk to you in 3 years. It very rarely ever works. And you know what happens? At the end of the 3 years, Fred cannot wait to get the HE double out that door. And we all go, anybody seen Fred in the last 6 months? Golly, rotated off the session and we haven't seen him since. I wonder why. Because you didn't have them in the right place. You weren't using his spiritual gifts where his spiritual gifts were. He was paddling upstream. He was plugged into the wrong current. Or, and this is not Fred's case, because Fred's using his gifts, somebody else is scared. They're scared because they failed in the past. And they failed in the past because they didn't know what their spiritual gifts were, and they had been asked to do something that they weren't gifted to do. And they failed because they were in the wrong place. And we let them fail because we put them in the wrong place. So take these home, do them, and then work together as a church to help one another find a ministry that you can practice. Maybe you can let folk practice a ministry for 3 months. Just kind of step into it, maybe beside somebody that's already doing it full time, and just see, hey, this fits, or ooh, that sucks. And go try something else for a while. So, spiritual gifts are the most wonderful thing in the world. If you're in the right place, you find that you can't get enough of it. You just want to do it and do it and do it and do it and do it. I mean, like Ina, look at Ina. Does anybody doubt that Ina's spiritual gift is music? I don't know that's not one of our 7 spiritual gifts, but Ina's gift is music and her ability to lead and to sing. Ina would not have been able to do this for the past how many years? 12? 15? If it wasn't her gift. Because the fascinating thing about using our gifts or our talents for the Lord is you give your gift or your talent to the Lord, the 5 guy and the 2 guy, and the Lord multiplies it. It's the Lord who multiplies it, not you. Not me. It's the Lord. Give it to the Lord and He makes 5, 10. He makes 2, 4. Give your money to the Lord, your tithe. He makes your 10, 100, I promise. That's how the Lord works. That's what Jesus knew what He was doing when He said to those disciples, see those loaves and see those fish? Pass it out. Because when you give it to the Lord, He goes, BAM! I think we're going to sing Refiner's Fire.
And before we do it, I want to... it comes from this verse in Malachi. Malachi is the very last book of the Old Testament. And it actually comes from the 3rd chapter. And Malachi is talking about God. And he says that God will sit like a refiner of silver. And He will purify us. And He will refine us like gold and silver. So that once again we might be an acceptable sacrifice to the Lord. And if you know anything about a refiner and a silversmith, you know that the refiner will sit over a fire and take the silver and they'll heat it up. And as the impurities come out of the silver, as it gets hotter and hotter and hotter, the silversmith has to be very, very careful, because if it gets too hot, the silver will burn up. But you ask the silversmith, how do you know right when it's, right before it's going to burn up, but right when it's ready and it's perfect? And the silversmith, the refiner, says, when I can see my image in it. Well, that's what God does to us. He kind of turns up the heat under us. And He says, I'm going to kind of turn up the heat under you. I'm going to make it a little hot in here for you, because I want to see my image in you. That's God's goal in us, is to see himself or herself in us. Because we're made in God's image. And he wants eventually for us to reflect Christ, right? So, if you feel kind of like God's turning up the heat on you, that's good. Because that means he's working in your life. Let's stand and sing.